Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today, in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final second. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are already in hour number two. And what a great way to kick off hour number two, as our conversation is going to continue with our executive producer, Ronnie Culver. I want to pick up where we left off. That's right. We were talking some MLB, talking about the Home Run Derby. What about also on Tuesday night, the All-Star Game? What were your takeaways from that?
It is what it is. Out of all the three major sports, it's my favorite All-Star Game, and that's not saying much. Because the Pro Bowl is terrible. The NBA is just, you know, who can do the fanciest dunk or fanciest play, you know. The MLB, at least there's a little bit of baseball, but it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It's just for fun. It's just an exhibition. It's a nice break. It gives us something to talk about. But overall, it went as expected. The one thing I'm glad to see now are the starting pitchers that do get selected to the All-Star Game no longer really pitching in the All-Star Game. Chris Sale started, but then another starter didn't come after him. And it just came in, you know, they're having all these relievers just coming in one inning at a time, which is fine. You know, that's what you kind of need to have, because we've ran into issues in the past where the starters were exposing their arms and teams were getting upset with them and so on and so forth. Right. And there's a lot of controversy. But listen, you know, the greatest moment wasn't even a baseball play at all on Tuesday. It was Nelson Cruz stopping with Joe West. Yes. To take a selfie.
I love that.
To take a photograph, yeah.
Just whips it out of his back pocket.
Yeah. I mean, that's brave because, I mean, if he actually got a hit and had to go for a slide, you know, I don't know about you, but my phone is way too important for me to just, you know, slide around on my backside on.
Hey, we are quickly running out of time as we get ready for hour number two. So talk to me. We're at the midpoint of the Major League Baseball season. It seems like there's been a lot of home runs. There's been a lot of strikeouts. I mean, can you pinpoint? What do you think that is about, Ronnie?
Because the ball is juiced.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Well, not really. Rob Manfred's already said it's not juiced, but there is something. There's got to be something going on, because for a long time, right after the steroid era kind of ended, we had this fall off of home runs. Now we're seeing a rise in them again. And why? Because the customers want to see offense. They don't want to see just pitching. They want to see offense. They want the summer of 98 revisited. And so I think there is something to be said about it. Just won't ever hear it.
Good perspective. Good stuff. Ronnie Culver with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, our executive producer. And you know what? The baseball conversation is going to continue. David Kaplan from Chicago, CSN and ESPN Radio, will be with us here after this commercial break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
We are back at the next generation of sports radio, and that is SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Always a true pleasure to spend each and every Friday night with former PGA Tour player and author, and that is Larry Miller. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening to you and your audience.
Well, we've got so many fun topics that we are going to dive into this evening. You always provide some great tips, drills, always some good advice. We look forward to that. But, you know, I think about last week. I wanted to get your thoughts on that Greenbrier Classic, how it played out. You know, it was life-changing for Xander for him to get that very first win on the PGA Tour. What a journey he has had.
Well, it's been a year of first-time winners, and we've talked about this
repetitive
before,
theme,
the-
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, about the parody out there, you know, and it's almost becoming a weekly event now. And, you know, you're not seeing the Tiger Woods, you know, winning seven tournaments, six tournaments, or if somebody wins two, it's a big deal. And Xander came through and got his first win. And, you know, it's always great to see, because they're so excited when they get that first win. It's a life-changing event. It gets them in the Masters and so many other things. But not to mention the endorsements that come along with it and
sure.
The 2-year exemption. So it's a very big deal, and it seems to be happening all the time this year.
You know, Larry, when you watched him in that tournament, what impressed you the most about this particular rookie, and why do you think he ultimately did win?
I think, you know, his composure was, but that, you know, but then again, that's a result of these guys playing on the web.com, you know, and learning to win out there, and the competition there is just a very small notch below the PGA Tour. They're so good. And so they're well seasoned, you know, and they get there. But his composure was really outstanding, and he seemed to be a ball striker, you know, where he just placed his shot so beautifully in the optimum positions in the fairways. He's kind of reminded me of a Jordan Spieth sort of, you know, but very composed. But that's getting to be the hallmark of these young players now because of the so much competition early on.
Yeah, Xander, as you talk about his composure, great job managing his emotion. It made me think of, as I was listening to you, one of my favorite lines from the movie The Greatest Game Ever Played is, there's only two types of players, those who keep their nerves in control and win championships, and those who do not. You got to focus on, you know, what you can control out there.
Well, there's no doubt about it. You can learn learn how to do that more and more. But that's part of the makeup of a really top player. It takes a certain emotional makeup to be able to go out there in the heat of competition and play as if you're playing with your buddies on a Sunday afternoon, and the top players are able to play with that same relaxed feeling, and if you don't have quite the emotional makeup for it, you can get better. There are techniques and ways that you can learn to deal with the pressure, you know, more effectively, but it's something that's innate in a lot of players. They just have that natural. Look at Dustin Johnson. He almost looks like he's ready to fall into a deep meditation when he's out there.
Right. Tommy Bolt was your teacher, was your coach. What did he teach you about composure and staying even keel out there on the course?
Well, the biggest thing was to not stay upset long. I mean, that's the key. You know, everybody gets upset. I mean, even the ones who don't look like they're upset, they do get upset inside. The key is to not be upset or angry very long. Because if you do, you're going to string out bad shots and string out bad holes and maybe ruin the round. It's okay to let it go for a few seconds, but you got to get over it.
It's so frustrating sometimes, though, as a parent, as a caddy, you know, because junior golfers, they don't understand that, that, you know, if they don't control those emotions, that it ultimately will cost you. It'll cost you shots out there, and it can cost you winning a round of golf.
Well, you have to peck away at them. You know, you got to keep telling them over and over about it. And it's a process that the young players go through. They all go through it, and they all, you know, they all learn how to, you know, they learn how to control their emotions, or they don't. And if they don't, they're not going to last very long at the top levels of the game. So it's something that with a young player, a junior, you have to keep pecking away at them, and just little by little, it's like teaching a little toddler to look both ways before he crosses the street. You got to tell him 1,000 times.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and the 900th time, they only look one way, and you tell them again, look both ways. Well, before long, they start looking both ways. It's the same thing. You have to keep preaching to keep an even keel, one shot at a time, get over the angriness, you know, the disappointment very quickly. And if you keep doing that and drill it into them, eventually it'll take hold and become part of their attitude.
We love when he is on the show talking about Larry Miller. We are inside the ropes with PGA professional and author. He does it all. He's a hybrid. He has his new book that is out. You have got to go out and get a copy. It is titled Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. And Larry, do you share a lot in the book? I mean, I've read so much of it over and over again, but what about composure? Do you talk about that in there and managing the emotions?
Well, I do, because I use Ben, you know, the book's about Hogan, basically, and so I use him as the prime example of doing so. And the way that Hogan did it, there are different ways to do it. And the way that Hogan did it was by immersing himself in his game plan. He would formulate a very detailed game plan before the tournament ever started. He planned how he was going to play every hole. Under any condition, even if the wind changed, he had an alternative for that. So he would formulate this detailed game plan, and then he would, during the round, he would become immersed in this game plan to the point that he didn't speak to anyone. He just looked straight ahead or at his notes or you know, and he was single-minded in his focus on his game plan, and that kept him from negative thoughts, thinking ahead of himself, you know, or worrying about trouble on the golf course. He didn't see any of that. All he saw was his game plan. Some players use different techniques, you know. Some like to talk, and that relieves their tension and their pressure. Like Trevino, you know, Lee Trevino never shut up when he was playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw him talk to himself in his own backswing out loud, and I think that was his way of not letting the pressure build up.
Former PGA Tour player Larry Miller with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. What advice do you give the golfers out there? Perhaps you're in a tournament and you've had a fantastic round of golf. What is the one thing that they should do? Should they go back to the range and go hit a bucket of balls so that they stay in rhythm? What do you suggest?
Absolutely. I, no question about it. You'll see that all the time. Player has a really great round. He'll go out and not, you know, he won't hit 200 balls, but he'll hit 50, 60 shots just to keep that great rhythm going so that it blends into the next day. You know, if you cut it off too soon and you go 14, 16 hours before you tee off again, you know, everything might change. And so you get a better chance if you can just keep it rolling. I used to, after a good round, I would not only do that, but I'd get back to the room in the hotel or wherever, and I'd get out and, you know, swing 8-10 times every now and then just to keep that feel, a good feel, a good rhythm that I had during the round. Absolutely.
The British Open, it is 1 week away. Our time is winding down. Give us a quick hit on what does it take mentally to win a major?
Patience, perseverance. You have to realize that it really comes down to the back nine on Sunday, and so you're trying to just chug along and put yourself in position. You know, the first order of business is to not, you know, I think it was Jack Nicklaus that said that you can't win a tournament on the first day, but you can certainly lose one. And so the idea is to get off to a nice, smooth, even start. Yeah. You don't have to light it up on the first day. Just go out there and play a solid round. Second order of business is to make the cut, okay? Now, they call the third round moving day. Saturday is usually. And so that's the day when you try to go low to get yourself in that pack of contention for that Sunday finish. And if you really notice, most tournaments, there are very few runaways on the PGA Tour, if you notice. There's so much parity now that you'll often see, you know, you look on the leaderboard and there's 8, 10, 12 people within two shots heading into the back nine. So you want to get in that pack and just kind of cruise along, get yourself in position for that back nine on Sunday. You know, but you can't win it on the first day. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to take too many crazy chances and go for too many tucked flags that first round.
That
just make solid pars, let a birdie here and there come when they come. But you don't force it.
That is some great advice. Of course, Larry Miller, he is a life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player. He is on our show each and every week as we talk about his new book, too, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. We look forward to another conversation, and we will be ready to talk some British Open. Okay, Larry?
Terrific. We can't wait.
You bet. Have a wonderful weekend. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. I tell you what, it has been a very big week of baseball, the Home Run Derby, the All-Star Game, and right now we are so delighted to welcome into the program for the very first time tonight, CSN Chicago and ESPN Radio's David Kaplan, who just released his new book. He's a busy guy this past spring. It is titled The Plan, and it is a fascinating read that details how one of the worst organizations in baseball became world champions. That's right, we're talking about the Chicago Cubs. Good evening, David. It's nice to have you with us.
It is great to be with you.
Well, it has been just an incredible week. And before we dive into your book, we want to get your thoughts on rookie Aaron Judge. I mean, this guy made quite an impression, and he was the Big E. He was electric.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Yes.
He's living proof that a guy, you know, could come up, have a slow start to his big league career, and then turn things around. Last year, in, I think, about a month's worth of work, he hit under 200, and everyone, I don't know, the guy might be too big, too slow. And here he works really hard the offseason, and a year later, he is almost the face of Major League Baseball.
You know, David, you know, watching him, he has this unbelievable power at the plate. It is a gift. It's overwhelming. Who does he remind you of?
He really reminds me of nobody. I mean, I don't remember a player that is as big, you know, in terms of physical stature. Like, I saw a picture of him at the All-Star game next to Frank Thomas.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, and Frank is a monster. He's huge. And then I look at a picture of Aaron Judge next to Frank, and Frank actually looks little. So I can't think of anybody built like this guy, that plays like this guy. He's a stud.
Yeah, we got NBA Summer League going on. I'm thinking he needs to be in Vegas hanging out, right?
Yeah, or playing tight end for my Bears.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Very good. Hey, you are listening to the voice of David Kaplan. He is an author, has just released his new book. We're going to get into that here momentarily. It is titled The Plan, and of course, David is with CSN Chicago and ESPN 1000. So, you know, we talk about his stature, his height, how big of a guy he is. What do you think has been the key, though, to his incredible success and coming on so strong in 2017?
His ability to not just be a home run hitter, without a doubt. You know, he's a guy that you watch him at the plate and he actually looks like he has a really, really good approach. You know, that you don't normally see that. It's totally different. Most big guys are, you know, feast or famine. They either hit it a mile or they don't hit it at all. This guy has proven that, you know, he can do more than just be a long ball threat. He can do everything.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what'd you think of in the Home Run Derby, the format of the clock? And it seems to add a little bit more pressure on these guys. Do you like the new format? What's your takeaways?
I did. I was very entertained. I thought the Home Run Derby had run its course. I really did. And I was bored by it. And the last couple of years, I thought Giancarlo Stanton was entertaining, and I thought this year was spectacular. It was mesmerizing to watch for me.
Yeah, when we talk about Aaron Judge, I mean, what he cranked out, 22 homers in the first round, and that certainly is quite a statement, and I can't even imagine what it will be like next year.
Yeah, and again, you know, the funny thing is, you watch this guy play, and you know, I said to you, I think he can become the face of Major League Baseball. But there are people that are already saying he's the best player in the game. You can't say that. He's played half a season,
right,
really, and a month last year where he really struggled. You know, look at my Cubs. They were the best team in baseball last year. They're off to a 25-6 start. Chris Bryant's MVP, and a year later, they have zero players from the World Series team in the All-Star game. They had one guy they got over,
wow,
the winner, Wade Davis. That's it. So let's see him string together 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and then you can call him the best player in the game.
Well, David, okay, let's segue and talk about your Chicago Cubs. Let's give them that midseason grade. You know, they are the reigning world champions, but how would you summarize, or how would you kind of describe to us, you know, how the season has played out? Because they have had some ups and downs.
They have. They've had really poor starting pitching. That's, for me, the biggest takeaway from this team. When you go into every game, and I think it's 72 games out of the 88 they've played, they have given up a run in the first inning. And that's just an amazing stat where every single day you're looking up going, oh boy, here we go. We got to keep scoring because we can't stop anybody. And they had the best starting pitching in the game the last year. So that's the biggest problem. Now, getting a 4 or 5 day break, getting Kyle Hendricks back, who's been gone for better than 6 weeks. You know, John Lackey's been dealing with plantar fasciitis. He says he thinks he's getting better. Jake Arrieta feels like he's coming around. If that's the case, that these guys are all trending upward, the Cubs are going to run down the Brewers and they're going to win the division. If they aren't trending upward, then it's over.
Do you anticipate any movement taking place when we got the trade deadline coming up? I mean, what are the trade rumors that you're hearing there in Chicago?
I mean, they're going to go after starting pitching, and I mean high-impact starting pitching, because John Lackey's probably retiring after this year. His contract's up. He's 38 years old. And then Jake Arrieta is a free agent, so unless he comes down dramatically in his asking price, they're not going to sign him, and he won't be back. So that's 2/5 of your rotation. Your number 5 starter was Brett Anderson. He's been out over 2 months with a back injury. That's 3/5 of your opening day rotation.
Wow.
So when you have all of that you've got to deal with, They've got to add not only impact starters, but ones that they can control for the next 4 or 5 years.
You are listening to The Voice, David Kaplan, with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, author of his new book. It is titled The Plan. We would love to hear from you tonight. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And David, connect with our audience across the country. Where can they get a copy of your new book? And also, where can they find you online?
They could find me on Twitter at The Capman,
T-H-E-K-A-P-M-A-N, yeah.
Or the same on Instagram, same on Snapchat. And then they can get the book either at barnesandnoble.com, or they can get it at Amazon.com. It's in all the Chicago area, Barnes & Nobles. And I think people will really be pleased when they read this, because it's not an account of the 2016 team. It's how they built this thing from lovable losers, worst-run organization in the game, to the envy of baseball and the defending world champs.
So what was it like for you personally last year for them to finally get to the top of the mountain and come out world champions? That, you know, the epic wait was, I mean, just it was, it's it finally came true, right?
Yeah, I was there, you know, every step of the way, because I do their pre- and post-game show, and then I do radio at ESPN in Chicago. And so, you know, I'm there at night, November the 2nd, and I would have bet $1 billion if I had it that they were going to win Game 7. That morning, I'm in line at Starbucks. There's Ben Zobrist. There's Justin Grimm. And I see Theo, and all of them are saying to me, we're good. We got this.
Wow.
We're ready to go. And when I heard that from them and they looked calm, I went, we're good. We're going to win tonight. And so I literally would have put my entire life savings on it if I could have. And now Rajay Davis hits the home run to tie the game. And I couldn't believe it. And I remember looking up to the sky. I wear a necklace that my late father used to wear that my mom gave him when they got engaged in 1958.
Wow.
And my dad's been gone since 2000. And I'm holding it, and he's the reason I do what I do, because he loved baseball and sports. And I look up in the sky, I go, Dad, it can't be this cruel. Come on, man. Mm. It cannot be this cruel to have it happen to us again.
Uh-huh.
And then the rains hit, and we're all pacing back and forth, and the Cubs finally win. I've covered a lot of cool things. I've been in the Blackhawk locker room for multiple Stanley Cups and on the ice covering it. I've been in the locker room for the Bulls championships and dealt with Michael Jordan throughout his great run. I've seen almost everything you could see in Chicago sports. This was by far the biggest story I will ever cover. Nothing can ever get bigger as long as I stay in sports. You go to news, you never know what happens.
Yeah.
But in sports, there is no story that I could ever cover that will rival this.
You know, I have to wonder too, David, I mean, you're a busy guy, CSN Chicago, ESPN 1000 up there. When in the world did you have time to write a book?
Yeah, it was funny. They asked me to write this book, and originally they said, write a book on the 2016
season. No pressure.
And I said, no shot. I'm not interested. You want to write a book on the whole rebuild and call it The Plan? I'm in. And so they said, okay, you better win. I said, I'm telling you, we're going to win the World Series. I said this back in February of 16. So they rolled the dice at Triumph Publishing. They put the money up. They said, let's do it. And I would come home. I kept a recorder with me 24/7. I'm in my car, and I would look and go, whoa, that's Billy Beane calling, because I would leave messages for all these people I wanted to interview.
Yeah.
He'd say, I got 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever you need right now. I would turn it on the Bluetooth in my car, turn on the recorder, and I'm driving to work. I'm driving to go do a game, whatever the case may be. And so I had, you know, all these great interviews, Theo and Tom Ricketts and Jed Hoyer and Joe Madden and Arrieta and Lester and Rizzo and on and on and on. And so I would come home after doing a game, and it would be 11:30, 12 at night, and I got to leave in the morning at like 7 to go to work at that point. And I said, you know what, I got to write now. It's all in my head. And I would stay up 3, 4, 5 hours. My wife would be like, you're out of your mind. You've got to get some sleep.
God bless her.
But I'd sleep after my radio show, get a quick nap in, and boom. All of a sudden, I had this amazing story to tell because they won.
Well, it is an impressive book. Of course, it is titled The Plan, and we are visiting with David Kaplan tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Quickly running out of time, just kind of sum it up for us. How impressive was this title build?
It was insane. It was, you know, Theo came in, and I remember when the rumor was out there they were going to hire him, I remember going on a Boston radio station, and I said, Theo, if you're listening, you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. This thing is so poorly run. The infrastructure is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he takes the job. I meet him, and he's not real forthcoming at the start, but I get to know him. And he says to me one day, hey, were you the guy that was on in Boston and said this infrastructure was so bad and I had no idea what I was getting myself into?
Oh,
he goes,
my gosh,
you don't know the half of it. It's worse than I thought.
Wow.
But, you know, he got it turned, and he's going to the Hall of Fame.
That's exciting. Okay. Hey, David Kaplan, been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Go out and get a copy of his new book. It is titled The Plan. Congratulations. And, David, you're a great guest. We look forward to another conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
And a very good evening. Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. As promised, before we went to commercial break, that's right, we are going to take time for a book review. We have a super summer selection as we go around the horn for, we're going to relive some amazing memories. Well-known author John Eisenberg chronicles the fascinating story of baseball's most legendary Iron Man. We're talking about Cal Ripken Jr. and Lou Gehrig, who each achieved the coveted and sometimes confounding record of the most consecutive games played. It is a true pleasure to welcome on our program for the very first time the great John Eisenberg. Good evening, John.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it is a true honor, and congratulations on the book. I have to tell you, I do a ton of book reviews on our show. This one is so impressive. If you look at the cover, you would think that, you know, this is a book just about two legendary baseball players. That's not so, right?
No. It certainly they're the main characters in there. But,
correct.
The real main character of this book is a record. This is that is the record that they held. I was still live in Baltimore, and I was a columnist at the Baltimore Sun for many of the years that Cal was building his streak. So I was very much on the front rows getting able to see this. And when I was looking for a book idea all these years later, I thought, well, it's such a fascinating thing to begin with, but how could I approach it in a fresh manner? And the record itself is so interesting because I can't think of another record in sports where, if you hit a bunch of home runs, people just cheer for you and say good job. But if you play a bunch of games in a row, people cheer for you and say good job, but they also say, why did you do that? And who cares, really? And so it's a record that really is somewhat controversial at times. Certainly Babe Ruth was critical of Lou Gehrig. Cal faced a lot of scrutiny in his years. And so I thought, well, I'm going to study this record. Where did it come from? Who thought it was a good idea in the first place? Is it a good idea in the first place? And why are there no more consecutive game streaks in baseball? Certainly no one's coming close to Cal. So I really studied it from the it's an examination of endurance in baseball featuring those two guys.
Longtime sports columnist and author of his brand new book, John Eisenberg, is with us. His book is titled The Streak, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken Jr., and Baseball's Most Historic Record. So how did they accomplish these incredible records? And the idea, as you're saying, you know, playing every day for years to come, I mean, it's hard to even, you know, to understand that.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. Well, certainly in Gehrig's case, he played through an awful lot of pain. Sports medicine has changed a lot since he played, which was in the 1920s and 30s. He played with injuries that there's no way they would let a major leaguer walk out today with broken fingers, broken toes, fractured shoulder. In this day and age, you have a broken finger on your bat, on one of your hands, they don't let you step up to the plate. They figure somebody else can do the job better. Well, back then, maybe I'm being a little cliche here, but it was the old put a little dust on it, rub it, and, you know, get out there. And so Lou definitely played through a lot of pain. Ripken didn't have as many injuries. He did have several that he played through, including a lot of back pain towards the end of his streak. But what he did, he started every game, 2,632 in a row. He started every game with the intention of playing nine innings. He never took a shortcut, no pinch hitting, no late game fielding, just fielding appearances. Lou Gehrig did a fair amount of that. Ripken did none. So it was definitely for him, there was no doubt he was going to play every day. So it's just determination, mental strength, a little bit of luck. There's no question about that. And as Cal said, I had the physicality to do it, so I did.
You know, a moment ago, John, you had talked about the personal connection that you had with Cal Ripken Jr. as 20 years as the Baltimore Suns sports columnist. You observed so many of his achievements. Tell us about Cal Ripken Jr. as a person and, you know, that special time that you had around him, you know, interviewing him, and what impressed you the most about him?
Well, Cal is an interesting fellow, that's for sure. A very sort of serious-minded, sober-minded. It's funny, his teammates know him, and I write about this in the book. He was very much a practical joker. He's a kid at heart. and he has a lot of fun with his teammates. There's a lot of wrestling contests and sort of old-school silliness. Right in the middle of the streak, I might add, he would do stuff like that. But certainly around the press, you know, he's a very analytical guy, and that's what I always found interesting about him. Really sharp, and had the ability to, and this is why he's on TV now, I think, had the ability to sort of remove himself from the situation and analyze it even as he was in it. And so I always enjoyed that about him. So he did agree to speak to me for this book, and I had a really good time talking to him all these years later about what he went through, and I knew he would be dead honest with, you know, some of his thoughts now 20 years later. And he's very... You know, he even admitted we went through this whole process of comparing his streak to Gehrig's on a number of different categories and fronts, and he was very honest about some of it, where Gehrig had it easier or Lou came out ahead. He was more than willing to admit that, almost as if he was discussing somebody that it wasn't himself. You know, it was very interesting, and that's why I've always enjoyed being around him. He's an original thinker.
Mm-hmm. Author John Eisenberg with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are shining the spotlight on his brand new book. It is titled The Streak, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken Jr., and Baseball's Most Historic Record. This is John's ninth book, and so I got to talk to you about what was the most challenging aspect of this project?
Well, for sure, the most challenging aspect of this project, it is my ninth book, as you mentioned, and all of my other ones I've written about football, I've written about horse racing, and the time frame that I cover in the book was always pretty focused, narrowly focused. I wrote a book about 1 year in the life of Vince Lombardi's first year coaching the Green Bay Packers, and a Triple Crown winner in horse racing, and so very, very short time frame. This one, when you're really going to examine the history of endurance in baseball, I mean, I found myself, suddenly I was in the 1870s, and so I'm examining and recreating scenes from there, and then it goes all the way to current times, 2017. So just almost a century and a half that I had to cover of baseball. So that required me to get up to speed on all of those eras and sort of put them all these consecutive game streaks in context and in framework. Tremendous amount of research to do that. I enjoyed it at all. That's what I do, and it's a lot of fun. But there's no doubt there's the reason why it took me more than 4 years to finish this book.
Oh, that is a tremendous challenge. So how does Cal Ripken Jr. streak, how does it compare to Lou Gehrig's? I mean, there's a myriad of factors that you got to consider. You talk about this in the book, the length of the season, the number of teams in the major leagues, you know, and just the medical advances and travel. I mean, you capture it all.
Yeah, well, the travel alone, I mean, there's any number of aspects where you can compare them. I mean, in the travel, Major League Baseball was played in two time zones when Lou Gehrig played, the Eastern and the Central time zone. He never traveled west to St. Louis, but yet, so definitely less travel. However, he didn't fly. He was on trains early in his career. Those trains were not air-conditioned.
Oh, my gosh.
He never played one inning at night. He played only day games, so the heat of the day, certainly difficult, but yet he never played on artificial turf, which Cal played on thousands of innings on artificial turf, definitely bad for an athlete's back and hip and all those things. So the streaks are, I mean, it's the same game, the same rules, but the streaks are dramatically different in many respects, and so it makes it interesting. I mean, you can... It's hard to say which one was better. The eras were really different. It shows you how much sports has changed over the years.
Who owned the record before Lou Gehrig?
Lou Gehrig broke the record that was held by Everett Scott, who was a little 120-pound shortstop for the Yankees and the Red Sox during and after World War One. He started out playing with the Red Sox, was traded to the Yankees, became the consecutive game streak leader, and wound up playing in 1,307 straight games which was by far the longest streak at that point. And he's really the one that, that brought the record into the light. I do go back, and you go to the 1890s and around there, there were definitely some streaks going on, but statistics in baseball, the apparatus was prehistoric, really, and incapable of tracking things like this. Games played in a row, the effort just wasn't there. It needed to evolve, and it had evolved and become more sophisticated by around 1920, when Everett Scott was starting to build his streak. So he became quite famous for playing in that many games in a row, and it's really the first time where the public said, wow, that shows a lot of character and other things. He may not be the best player, but he certainly has some things going for them that are estimable. And so it was Everett Scott, just a little old, wiry, thin shortstop, not the guy you would think of as mm-hmm. an Iron Man.
Hey, author John Eisenberg is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We would love to connect with you. Join us on Twitter at eRadio Sports. You know what? We've got an amazing podcast page, podcastarena.com, podcastarena.com. You can check out our show, all of our exclusive interviews, and all of our amazing hosts here at our network, the next generation of sports radio. John, I got to ask you this as we talk about the book, The Streak. Do you think you'll ever see, or we will ever see anyone, break Cal Ripken's record?
I don't think we will. I mean, if you look at where it is, the consecutive game streak, on the day that this book was published, which was July 4th, 2017, on the day it came out, the consecutive game streak holder was the shortstop for the Kansas City Royals, Alcides Escobar, and his streak was 254 games in a row. So he's about 2,300, if my math is right, 2,378 uh-huh. games short of Cal Ripken. So he's a long way to go. It just doesn't happen anymore in Major League Baseball. There's a number of reasons why. I mean, medical science, sports medicine is much more advanced. Big contracts. You know, if you're hurt now and you're a high paid player, they don't play you. They don't want to play. The team doesn't want to risk the investment. And analytics, that's another, sophistication of baseball they can now, even the best player on the team sometimes will sit if somebody else has great stats against that night's pitcher. There's all the sophistication in lineup design and all these things that didn't exist even 15 years ago. There's many more reasons for a guy to get benched. And so you just don't see it anymore. And so it's gone for the most part. So I don't think we will ever see. It's always easy to say, right? But I don't think this record's going to get touched.
Author John Eisenberg has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I got to ask you this. When I interview authors, I always, we'll talk about, what was one thing you learned that perhaps surprised you? Is there something, a nugget that you can share?
Well, yes, I did in my research. It certainly surprised me to learn that in the 1950s, Stan Musial, one of the great players ever, in the process of setting the National League record for consecutive games played, he was allowed to extend his record one night without ever setting foot on the field. Sort
How?
Of a piece of magic, statistical magic, that there's no way it would happen today.
Uh-huh.
But there was no language in the rule book for what comprised a game appearance. So he had a sore hand, and his manager went to the umpires before the game and said, look, if I put him in the lineup and I pinch hit for him in the top of the first inning, will that count as a game appearance?
Wow.
And the umpire said yes.
Uh-huh.
So he did. So he was pinch hit for in the top of the first inning. He never played, but the league allowed his streak to continue.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from this book? It's a great...
Well, it's just doubt, but yeah. Tremendous feedback. Great review in the Wall Street Journal and mentions in USA Today, and it's getting mentioned in a lot of places, and I could not be more gratified with the initial response.
Hey, the baseball conversation continues with John Eisenberg, longtime sports columnist, and has also just released his new book. It is titled The Streak, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken Jr., and Baseball's Most Historic Record. You stay close. We will be right back at SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We're going to continue our conversation with John Eisenberg. That's right, we are shining the spotlight on his new book. It is titled The Streak, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken Jr., and Baseball's Most Historic Record. Author John Eisenberg has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I got to ask you this. When I interview authors, I always, you know, we'll talk about, you know, what was one thing you learned that perhaps surprised you? Is there something, a nugget that you can share?
Well, yes, I did in my research. It certainly surprised me to learn that in the 1950s, Stan Musial, one of the great players ever, in the process of setting the National League record for consecutive games played, he was allowed to extend his record one night without ever setting foot on the field. Sort
How?
Of a piece of magic, statistical magic, that there's no way it would happen today.
Uh-huh.
But there was no language in the rule book for what consisted, what comprised a game appearance. So he had a sore hand, and his manager went to the umpires before the game and said, look, if I put him in the lineup and I pinch hit for him in the top of the first inning, will that count as a game appearance?
Wow.
And the umpire said yes.
Uh-huh.
So he did. So he was pinch hit for in the top of the first inning. He never played, but the league allowed his streak to continue.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from this book? It's a great...
Well, it's just out, but yeah. Tremendous feedback. Great review in the Wall Street Journal and mentions in USA Today, and it's getting mentioned in a lot of places, and I could not be more gratified with the initial response.
It is very special. Go out and get a copy of it. It is titled The Streak, Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken Jr., and Baseball's Most Historic Record. John Eisenberg has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Congratulations, and we look forward to your next release. You had a couple football books before this, so what can we look forward to in the future?
Yeah, well, I am working on another football book that will be done soon. It's set in the early days of professional football, and it's based more on the owners than the players, so I'm having a lot of fun with it. Should be done soon.
Well, you know a thing or two about football because you're from the great state of Texas right here. Your hometown's Dallas, right?
You got that right. That is correct.
Outstanding. We were just talking to John Eisenberg. Special thank you to him and all of our amazing guests right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend.